Hey guys, I wanted to tell you about another podcast that I'm working on with Evergreen Podcasts. I'm the producer of the true crime podcast, Crime Capsule. Writer and host Benjamin Morris takes listeners deep into some of history's most compelling crimes. Each episode will provide a unique perspective on true crime as Morris interviews the authors who have written extensively about everything from the Dixie Mafia to the Thibodeau Massacre. Crime Capsule is an Evergreen Podcast production in partnership with the History Press and Arcadia Publishing, so we will have an endless and diverse catalog of books to explore. From forgotten serial killers to advancements in DNA, I can guarantee you, Crime Capsule will have an episode for everyone. If you're looking for a new show to listen to during the holidays, then download Crime Capsule today at killerpodcasts.com or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is you find your favorite shows. Crime Capsule is part of Killer Podcasts, the new true crime network from Evergreen. Please join us every Thursday for new episodes. Crime Capsule. History so interesting, it's criminal. Slow Burn Media, an Evergreen podcast, presents Who Killed? A podcast that provides a voice for the voiceless.
Well, we know wolves killing livestock has been a big concern all along as the state starts to reintroduce them. We're going to, of course, continue to follow the story for you closely. Now to Boulder, where this month marks 25 years since JonBenet Ramsey was murdered. New advancements in DNA technology has provided Boulder Police and the Colorado Bureau of Investigation a new look at over 750 crime scene samples. Possible suspects are being run through the system all over again. DNA is one of the leading tools for investigators in this case, and advancing technology could help them get closer to a killer. To this date, her killer remains unknown.
It's a story that is infamously mysterious. A six-year-old girl murdered in her home the day after Christmas. 25 years later, the case of JonBenet Ramsey remains unsolved. But new advancements in DNA technology may finally be able to provide some answers. Kelsey Kernstein is here with us right now with an update on the case. Kelsey?
Well, Adrian, I think so many of us remember the JonBenet Ramsey case. The six-year-old beauty queen found dead in her basement, like you said. The case ruled a homicide. No one ever charged. Now, 25 years later, that could all change with the help of new DNA technology.
December 26, 1996, JonBenet Ramsey's mother reports her missing. Later that day, the body of the six-year-old beauty queen is found in the family's basement, strangled, and her skull broken from a blow to the head. Suspicions initially surrounded the young girl's family, but they were eventually cleared and no arrests were ever made.
There is a DNA profile running in the DNA database and has been for 20 years. So there's never been a match.
Now the Boulder Police Department says it's working with state investigators on future DNA advancements to try to crack the case.
What it indicates to me is they're going to go talk to somebody that does investigative genetic genealogy.
While the Boulder Police Department is not offering specifics on how it's using DNA technology in the investigation, University of Virginia chemistry professor James Landers tells News Nation that advances in the area of touch DNA may be helpful. Small amounts of DNA left behind when an attacker touches a victim.
That technology in the last 10 years has improved to the point where you don't need as much DNA as you did two decades ago.
Landers also says that if DNA from a crime scene doesn't match any DNA in existing databases, investigators can also use technology to match it to a person's relative, like a parent, child, or sibling.
Linking a profile to a particular family, in other words, you don't have the exact person, but you've got somebody who's either a brother or a cousin or a second cousin.
And the Boulder Police Department says it cannot answer any specific questions in the case, but also said it's actively reviewing genetic DNA testing processes to see if those can be applied to the case moving forward, Adrian.
Yeah, it's just bizarre that even after all this time, with all the technological advances we've had, we still don't know what happened.
25 years later, Adrian.
Thank you, Kelsey. Thank you so much for watching. Make sure to click on the red subscribe button below so you can get more of News Nation's fact-driven, unbiased coverage.
Hello and welcome to episode 148 of Who Killed? I am your host, Bill Huffman, and this is a Slow Burn Media and Evergreen Podcast production. On this week's episode, we'll be wrapping up my conversation with the captain about the infamous JonBenet Ramsey murder and the fact that it's been 25 years since the case first hit the headlines. We'll talk about what we hope to see in 2022 and talk about potential suspects as well as what we would like to see with the new DNA advancements. So let's just jump into my conversation with the captain and hope you guys had a great holiday and have a safe New Year's Eve.
And so once I became a student or once I became a teacher, no matter what my student looked like, I was viewing them as a student. So, you know, I don't know how else to say this without being so blunt. I don't look at when people say that they were sexualizing her. I don't look at them as sexualizing her, but I have no attraction to a 6-year-old kid.
No, absolutely not.
So I understand, like, oh yeah, maybe she's, you know, the dresses weren't like super revealing or anything, and yeah, they put on a little bit more makeup, but is it to put on more makeup? It's not like you're putting makeup on your child to go to school. You're putting on makeup for them to be on stage. We do this if you're in a musical.
Sure.
You do. So I don't know. Like, I think people put a lot of fault into that. And yes, you're putting your kid into like a weird realm where maybe there are some sickos that go around and watch these things. But there's sickos everywhere. There's literally sickos every day driving around schools. You know, looking for that lone sheep, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much weight I put into the whole, you know, that there some of this is their fault because they're putting her in this position. Because we don't know if the pageants had anything to do with her death.
No, and that's a good point because they became the media lightning rod. You know, that was an easy thing for them to put up to kind of generate outrage and almost blame the parents by saying and putting out those videos and questioning, you know, having panel discussions on Nancy yeah. Grace or whatever about whether or not, you know, this is what should parents should be doing with their children. You know, are they exploiting them? You know, and it's just like, okay, well,
yeah, are they exploiting their child by spending thousands upon thousands of dollars
to put them spoiling them? But
yeah,
you know,
I mean, my problem with the pageants would just be like depending on what their talent would be or how they answer the stuff. You know, I mean, like if you're doing magic tricks, I don't know, but. I don't think it's wrong to push your children, you know, whatever it is. If they're going to sign up for guitar lessons, push them to be the best guitar player they can be.
Yeah, I agree. And
you know, or if your kid signs up for soccer then or baseball or whatever, they're not quitting halfway through the season. So I don't mind the aspect that it was something that Patsy did herself, and so. She wanted to expose her child to that world. I don't know if that's a bad thing.
Yeah,
because like the other problem too is like the majority of kids that are molested by somebody they know. So then you're going to start putting the blame on the parents because they were friends with creepos. You know what I mean? Like, and they just didn't know that they were creepos. So
it's hard to know what's in people's closets if they're in people's closets. And again, you know,
well, Adam Carolla,
what's that?
Adam Carolla had this great thing where when they needed like a volunteer, kids are going camping this weekend, we need a volunteer, the first two guys to raise their hand, they're out. Like, I'll do it. Nope. And then you've tried to find the guy that doesn't, like 100% doesn't want to do it, and that's the guy you want chaperoning the kids going camping.
I agree with you 100% on that one. That's a very good one. Good job, Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
A little credit where credit's due. Yeah, I think the one thing that is interesting, you know, all this focus on the parents for like a year, I mean, basically, it's still a question. I mean, they're you know, doing all these writing analysis in 1998, and they've ruled out John, but they haven't ruled out Patsy. And it's like, well, okay, well, there's a great another headline that the media can run with, that basically they're not really saying that it's her handwriting. They're just saying they can't rule it out, and therefore it becomes a freaking, you know.
Well, I mean, that's true and untrue. So they rule John out of writing the note. They say that we didn't rule out Patsy, but at some point law enforcement leaks to media that the handwriting sample matched Patsy. There's still people that believe, like, well, how do you explain the ransom? I mean, I'm ever since we did these episodes, I mean, once a week I have somebody arguing with me about JonBenet Ramsey, and they go, well, how do you explain that the handwriting samples match Patsy? I'm like, they didn't. That's just the information that you heard. You know, they actually matched more his business partner, and I loved his thing. Like, I mean, he did, like, I don't know, over 10 handwriting samples. Well, the more you do, the more likely you're going to match, because they're going to take a cumulative of all everything you've done. Mm-hmm. So she didn't match, period.
Yeah,
I can't remember what the actual numbers was, but once they knew that she didn't match is when law enforcement leaked that she matched. And then and that's the thing, too. It's like sometimes with these cases, if you hear a piece of information, you can't get that out of your head.
Yeah.
So if I feed that into, if I can feed that information first to everybody, you're not going to be able to get that out of your head. And so in a sense, it could help them, you know, prosecute people that shouldn't be prosecuted. So she didn't match the handwriting sample. John didn't match. I think the ransom note makes it so confusing. There's also a thing in the CBS report where they claim that they can hear Burke in the background, and that the parents claim over and over, we don't think Burke was up at the time. So they call 911, and at the end of the call, it sounds like a little kid going like, what happened? What's going on? And they're like, we're not talking to you right now, or something like that. And they think, like, a lot of people have jumped to the conclusion, oh, well, because Burke did something bad, so they're telling Burke, we're not talking to you right now. You know how many times my parents have been on the phone when I was little and they said, I'm not talking with you. I'm not going to talk to you right now. I'm not discussing this with you right now. So
there's something pressing at the moment. Your sister is dead, or no, missing at this point.
Right. And so I think that's the other thing, too, is the Patsy and John basically say that those next 3 days are blurs.
Yeah.
And when they try to remember, like, the timeline or the events, they can't. It's all a blur. Because once they find their child dead, it's almost like all those memories just, like, mashed up together. And that's a reasonable explanation. So there's constantly times where people are trying to throw them under the bus, and they're going, wait a second, we don't know the information because all that is a blur. Like when they've asked them, like, well then, because, look, I couldn't tell, if you asked me last Tuesday, what did I eat for lunch? I don't know. That doesn't mean I was off killing somebody. I just don't know what I ate for lunch. I don't know what I had for dinner. I don't know if I watched TV that, you know. So I think these people that expect the Ramseys or whoever's involved in these crimes to remember every single detail in which it happened and what order it happened in, it's just, that's ridiculous. So look, and I think what the parents were trying to say is, okay, if Burke was up, we told everybody that he was asleep. We think he was asleep. Well, it was almost like when the 911 call came out and you kind of hear maybe somebody that is Burke on the phone. Everybody's like, oh, we got him now.
Yeah, you see it in the report, you know, in the reporting of the media. You know, it's 1998, John, you know, audio enhancement shows that Burke was heard in the background. And you know, the Ramses originally claimed that Burke was asleep, and this must mean something. It's like, right. Well, you know,
Spetzel, or does it mean they misremembered?
Misremembered, or just lots of stuff was going on at that time. I'd be a little freaked out too, and I don't know if I would remember that, especially when there's just such trauma going on. I mean, it's Spetzel gave me a good example. It's like, you know, eyewitnesses are, you know, because of the fact that, dude, tell me the last, you know, you bump into somebody at the mall yesterday, tell me what he looked like. You know, it's just right. Like, now, of course, malls don't exist anymore. It'd be like more like, hey, you bumped into somebody at Amazon or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, I don't know. But
I went to the mall yesterday. It was very strange.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was like a nice mall. I'm like, 20 years ago, it was a nice mall. And now it's like half the stores are closed, and just
it's terrible what's happened with the malls. But yeah, the thing about the ransom note that gets me, always gets me, is the fact that it's 2.5 pages long.
Yeah, and essentially,
what the hell are you doing writing 2.5 pages worth of material?
Yeah, and essentially, it was written on paper and pen that they believe came from the house.
Yes, they believe it was Patsy's notebook paper, I think it was, or something along those lines.
But that's the thing too, is like, you know, if you believe that it was somebody close to the house, I mean, or close to the family, like I said, 2 days prior, they had
slipped that out.
Yeah, you're just there, and for whatever reason, you grab a pad, a paper, and a pen, and you go, okay, I'm going to use this. Or what? I don't know if this is Nick's theory or not, but one of the things that we always kind of discussed was they went to this party. Their friends and family would have known about the party. So it's not impossible to think, because the house was so big, that the person came in while they're at the party.
That is something that I think is really likely, because of the fact that there's no forced entry. There's no way that they could have come in through that door like we talked about earlier. I mean, the cobwebs were in the window in the basement. You know, nobody entered that way.
Right.
I imagine that if this person was a family friend, that he did exactly that, that he was laying in wait. And he could have easily been in that cellar where she was found.
Right.
Because it was a big house, and it was, you know, they did just have it. I mean, if you're a family friend, you know stuff about the home. So.
Yeah, I mean, from my reports, 27 keys that they had no clue where they went.
27 keys.
Because they had gardeners, cooks, they had maids.
That opens up so many doors, pun intended, but.
But also law enforcement, there's people in law enforcement that state there was doors open or unlocked when they got to the house.
Yeah, there was one door that was unlocked, and hey, you know, I think it was one of those back door things, you know.
Yeah.
But again, if you know the house, I know, like, my grandparents' house, they lived in a big old house in Clifton Park, which is an old money area here in Northeast Ohio, and you know, they had like a, you know, an old cellar, and there was an extra door that, you know, was in the back behind, like, you wouldn't even know it was there unless you had been to that house before.
Right.
But you could get into the house and have free reign. And I do think that's a great thought, especially if this guy, like, even if it wasn't a family friend, but somebody that was on that particular tour and kind of went on that tour because he knew that's where JonBenet lived, and that he was not just scoping out her, but scoping out where he could hide and how he could get in.
Yeah. And we're possibly is there longer than a day. I mean, it's almost 8,000 square foot. I mean, that's a big house, and that's, I don't think that's including the basement square footage.
No, most I don't believe real estate counts the basement square footage. So, I mean, right. You got to imagine how much room or space there would be to hide. And you could, like you said, it could have been a couple days. I mean, hey, take some food and whatever. But when they leave, use the bathroom, do whatever you need to do. Or
well, and there was a neighbor, and he's not talked about a lot, but that night, roughly after Patsy claimed she was in bed, he thought it was Patsy or John or somebody just up moving around. So somebody was up moving around after she's claiming that they're both in bed.
Right.
And so doesn't mean it couldn't be her, but the neighbor could never confirm who it was. So, but again, also, let's say you're dressed up like Santa Claus. You show up, I'm going to dress up like Santa Claus. If they see me but I'm a family friend, I'm like, oh, I was just dropping off these gifts for JonBenet and Burke. You know, I just wanted to surprise them. Here's the gifts I got. All I have to do is show up with a couple gifts in your Santa Claus suit. I mean, I believe somebody fed her. I don't think it was Patsy. But again, even if it was Patsy and Patsy doesn't remember that, that doesn't mean she's a killer. It just means that she's misremembering information. And again, when even saying that makes me seem like I'm giving him such a benefit of the doubt. But I would just have a hard time. I mean, you look at West Memphis 3, for example, all those parents that are dealing with their child the next day that they find dead, all of their stories are a little, you could dive through and pick through and go, this person's lying. But I don't think the person's lying. I think they're just misremembering because it was such a, I couldn't imagine a more traumatic situation for a parent.
Yeah. I mean, you got to imagine, especially in the cases like West Memphis 3, and we're talking 92, 91? I don't know. Something along those lines. But, yeah. And, oh, gosh. I mean, again, it's so hard. Who won the Super Bowl last year or 2 years ago? I mean, or who won the World Series? Things that you think you would remember, and you're just like, oh, I
right.
don't know. Does that mean I was out on a killing spree during the Super Bowl? No.
Right.
But I just don't. You know, I can't remember.
Or like, you know, even just like thinking about the holidays. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yes, happy holidays.
But even holidays, 10 years old, what did you get? I don't remember. I don't remember what I got.
Specifically as a 10-year-old? No, I have no recollection. I mean, I can say I got a Nintendo at some point.
Some point, right, right, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
I wasn't cool enough to ask for like cool gifts. I still remember like CDs were becoming a popular thing, but I didn't have any. So like my parents were like, do you want to, because I was like, I want a boombox. And they're like, cool. Do you want a CD player on it? And I'm like, not necessarily, you know, I don't need one. And so since my dad is so practical and cheap, they just bought the tape player boombox.
Oh,
and then like a year later, I was like, oh, well, this is kind of obsolete now. And so I asked my dad, well, why didn't you buy me a boombox with a CD player on it? And he's like, well, at the time, the tape deck ones were so cheap that he was like, well, just get him the cheap one. That's what he asked for. And my mom's going, no, we need to get him the CD player one. He's like, nah, that's not what he asked for. He asked for this cheap one. So no, I don't know how much... And look, and why do we point guilty finger at somebody because they don't remember the information? I mean, I understand that some people think that they're lying, but I think the person was going to take them. I don't think the person was ever going to take them back. I don't think they were going to hold them for ransom and take them back.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? And like get this payday. I think they were going to take them somewhere because the crime was motivated sexually, and they're probably going, you know, probably similar to like Amy Mihaljevic situation. Take her somewhere, and then eventually, you know, kill her to cover up that crime. But the fact that she never got out of the house, that's what makes the story so much more interesting, is that you have this ransom note. And also, like, back to the pageants. If the parents want to blame themselves for anything, without those pageants and without those videos and without the millions upon millions of pictures, this case would have never been as big as it was. Because nowadays, you take even like Delphi, for example. Both victims were on social media. Their parents were on social media. Their friends were on social media. You can start gathering up hundreds of images of the victims very quickly. And back in the 90s, that just wasn't possible. And especially if the family didn't want to talk to the media, now they might have hundreds of pictures, but they're not going to share those. And also, because those pageants were, you know, a lot of those, they have photographers come and take a bunch of pictures and then say, hey, if you want these pictures, you got to pay us. Well, they have that, you know, backlogged, and all those contestants had to sign waivers to let them take their picture. So many people were selling those images to the media.
Yeah, you know. And that's another disgusting aspect of the media and exploitation of a child, in my opinion, especially since, you know, in the 90s, like you said, there weren't digital cameras and, you know, cell phone cameras and Instagram and all the other stuff that you can basically just, any news station can just pull any image they want for whatever. But to have like an actual video of her performing like a song and dance routine, or her in a, you know, all these different outfits. I mean, it was just like, as somebody who worked in the media, that's media gold, because you just,
it's content.
It's content. And then you have a lot of questions about whether or not it's, is this a smart thing to be doing with your child? And it opens up all these different avenues of discussion, but it, again, it doesn't ever really solve the case or get anywhere near a suspect. I mean, I know, like, anytime you, okay, you just like Delphi, we were talking about Delphi. You could Google Delphi, and there's going to be 10 suspects that come up. Just because they were, something happened, and they sort of look like Bridge Guy or whatever.
Or they're in the area.
Yeah.
Or
and
had
they
ties
give,
to the
and
area.
And they put their names out there. I mean, who knows? I mean, some of these people, yeah, if they did something to a child, then who cares? You know, they deserve to be shamed for that. But you have this other guy. I mean, you look up, you know, the details about JonBenet, and, you know, from 2018, they had a guy who, you know, this guy Glenn Meyer, who was apparently living across the street in somebody's basement secretly. Well,
right,
that's kind of disturbing, and I can't imagine that doesn't at least ring some bells to investigators. And it totally backs up the theory of what you were saying about somebody being inside the house before.
Well, then on top of that, you know, the DA comes out and rules out John, Patsy, and Burke. And if you actually read that report, the DA that they're using to rule them out is a mixture. So that doesn't mean that it couldn't be John. It doesn't mean it couldn't be Patsy. It just means that... It's like the dumbest thing. Like, we're going to double down on them and blame them for this murder, put their life through hell, and then come back and apologize. But the apology doesn't make any sense, because you shouldn't be clearing them anyways, because the evidence doesn't actually clear them. But, you know, and I'm glad that you reached out to just talk, because it's always good to talk to you. But today they come out with this information that, hey, we do have DNA and we can test it. I believe it'd be familiar, or
familial,
however you say that. Yeah, familiar.
Familial.
yeah, I can't do it.
Yeah, this is the statement from the police, and it's short and sweet, but I'm just going to read it verbatim. And it's the statement on the 25th anniversary of the JonBenet Ramsey murder. As of December 2021, the Boulder Police Department has processed more than 1,500 pieces of evidence related to the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. JonBenet was 6 years old when she was reported missing on December 26, 1996, after her family reported finding a ransom note inside their home in the 700 block of 15th Street. Her body was found in a basement room, and a later autopsy revealed that the cause of her death was strangulation. As of December 2021, that evidence has included the analysis of nearly 1,000 DNA samples. The BPD Major Crimes Unit has received, reviewed, or investigated more than 21,000 tips, letters, and emails, and detectives have traveled to 19 states to interview or speak with more than 1,000 people in connection with this crime. But thanks to the huge advances in DNA technology, multiple suspects have been run through the system to check for matches. CBI has updated over 750 reference samples with the latest DNA technology. The Boulder Police Department works closely with CBI on future advancements, DNA advancements. Additionally, Boulder Police have worked with CBI to ensure DNA in the system can be compared correctly to DNA samples that have been uploaded to ensure accuracy. The DNA is checked regularly for any new matches. And then it goes on to state, basically, as the department continues to use new technology to enhance the investigation, it is actively reviewing genetic DNA testing processes to see if those can be applied to this case moving forward. So basically, they're just saying, yeah, we do have some stuff, and we have to kind of dot our I's and cross our T's to see if it's even applicable in this familial DNA situation. And it is interesting, though.
Well, and also what Lou Schmidt, which was a detective they brought in to...
Yes.
And he's kind of the one that started the intruder theory. I think he was wrong about it. I mean, he starts claiming that they went through this window in the basement, but like you were saying, there's cobwebs. Yep. So it's like, I think that's the window they were trying to leave out of. And I don't know why they would pick that direction. Why wouldn't you... I think the killer got spooked and decided, okay, well, I'm just going to abandon the plan and just leave. Maybe heard something in the house, got spooked, and took off. Maybe the way that they came in, or maybe even just through the front door. I mean, who knows? I mean, it wouldn't be that suspicious on Christmas night, even if it was midnight or after 1 o'clock, that you saw a guy in a Santa suit walking out of a house. I mean, obviously nobody saw that, but what Lou Schmidt's family is doing, because he was so adamant that he had a list of people, and he said the killer is on that list, and his family, along with JonBenet's family, I think John Ramsey's involved, and I think her half-brother's involved. I don't know how much Burke is involved. But they have an investigation team that they're heading up, and they're going and finding these guys and either getting them to submit samples, or they're following them around until they can get a pop can or a cigarette butt or something. And I know that they've already cleared like 30, 40 some people off his list. So I hope we get answers, but I think every year that we're coming to the end, especially with like True Crime Garage, like one of the things that me and Nick talked about was like, well, I hope 2020, I mean, think about I feel like I'm jumping all over the place right now, but
you
think about some of the cases. I just go in circles. But think about some of the big cases that were solved. I mean, you know, Golden State Killer, most people didn't think was ever going to be solved. And it gets solved. And so maybe 2022 is the year JonBenet gets solved. Maybe it's the year that we finally have charges brought against somebody in the Delphi murders. Maybe it's the Amy Mihaljevic case. That's what's kind of interesting. And we still have somewhat of our youth. So in the next 20 years, I think we're going to see a lot of big cases that people thought were never going to be solved.
Yeah, I mean, we can only hope. I mean, it really has gotten to the point where a lot of these cases that we've covered, like Mihaljevic's, Brian Schaefer, you've covered, you know, you just eventually you hope one day you'll find an answer. But as the time goes by, you just kind of lose hope, and it's discouraging. I'm sure it's got to be way worse for John. You know, Patsy has since passed away from cancer. And, you know, for her brother, I mean, look at her brother. I mean, he's been accused of killing his sister for the last 20 years. And it's like, all right, well, that doesn't make much sense. And he's sued everybody who's said that. So, and you have to give depositions when you do stuff like that. So you don't put yourself on the line out there if you're guilty. So I don't buy that he is involved with this whatsoever. That's just my honest opinion.
No, and I also love when people go, I saw him on Dr. Phil and he smiles funny. Like, that has nothing to do. Yeah, maybe he smiles funny because his six-year-old sister was murdered. And it was because of that trauma and the fact that when he went to the grocery store with his parents, he would see, you know, Burke killed JonBenet or, you know, Patsy and John killed JonBenet, or the fact that Patsy was accused of child molestation. John Ramsey was accused of child molestation. That is a lot to for a 9-year-old to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about impacting your like most transformative years of your life. I mean, your brain's just beginning to form, and at 9, all this stuff is coming at you. And yeah, like you said, at the grocery store, every single magazine for the next year had something about the JonBenet case.
Yeah.
How could he ever escape that?
Or how much it was on TV, like you said. I mean, I remember when the Casey Anthony trial was happening, it seemed like it was Nancy Grace every night.
Tottenham.
Was talking about it, you know. Yeah, and my girlfriend at the time, it was like every night, just hours of them just regurgitating the same shit. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we're fascinated with this stuff and we can't turn away. But it was like a perfect storm. You know, a very pretty girl, a family with money, a nice area, Christmas. I think the house looking small helped the case, because I think if they would have showed a mansion, it might have not blew up. But like you said, the content that they had, the amount of pictures, and there was a new thing that came out. It was supposed to be a series. I think it only lasted one episode, and so maybe they just did a pilot and then released it. But John Ramsey actually showed the last picture that he took of JonBenet, and she, of course, she's like a 6-year-old kid, so she has no makeup on, and she looked tired, and she was just looking up at her dad like, I'm tired. Can we go home now? And that was the night that he took her into the house and put her to bed. And that's the night that she was killed. And I don't know if you do this, but, you know, I feel like sometimes true crime scars you a little bit. And I'll go to a family function around the holidays and they'll be like, oh, well, little Joey, you know, he's growing up. I go, he's looking pretty big now. How old is he? 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or whatever. And then I start thinking about the victims that we've covered and, oh man, you know, he's so little at 6, you know?
Yeah.
And so little at 10 and you start, and I'm good now. I don't let that slip out of my mouth. Oh, that's the same age as the victims in West Memphis 3, you know?
Yeah, the West. But, I mean, especially with all the graphic pictures that were included in the, you know, Paradise Lost documentaries. I mean, those are images that.
Well, same with JonBenet, though. You know, those where you can see, you know, autopsy photographs of her neck and different parts of her body. And, you know, it's a tough case. And people always ask me if you could solve one case. I mean, right now it would be a toss up between the Delphi murders and JonBenet. But I think there's a lot of armchair detectives, a lot of sleuthers that still gravitate to the JonBenet Ramsey case. And if it was solved, then maybe we would learn from our mistakes and maybe move forward in a better direction. So then we could work harder on some other cases.
Yeah, and I think that JonBenet unfortunately falls into that white girl, pretty blonde syndrome that the media falls for every time, you know.
Yeah, but maybe she started it.
Nah, I mean, it's possible, but I mean, it's always, I mean, Amy was a big story. I mean, again, it's just like, there was just so, like you said, there was just so much material that they had to work with that they could continue telling new sides of the story. And then let's not forget that, you know, John and Patsy, you know, there was all sorts of rumors that they weren't cooperating with police. And then, you know, then they get named as suspects, like you said. And then it's like, okay, all right, where is this really going? I mean, it's like.
Well, think about how many books and movies and documentaries were made where they could just. We're not going to tell you any new information, but there's new pictures you've never seen.
Yeah.
And it might just be some Christmas photos that they found from 2 years ago. Because that's the other thing. It wasn't just the pageant pictures. Patsy, they had money, so they liked taking family photos.
Sure.
You know? We took a family photo a couple days ago, like the whole like cousins and everybody. And I was like, we haven't done that in like 25 years.
I know. I was thinking about doing that. The last time our family was together, I'm like, we need to do, like, we used to do that. Seemed like we used to do it every time we got together.
Yeah.
You know, like, and now just sit on the steps and, like, have, like, the different generations. And it's like, now that we have cell phones and stuff like that with more accessibility than ever, we just don't take family photos as many. It's weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, no, but, you know, I wish the case would get solved. And that will be my wish this year on Christmas and on the New Year's. That I mean, like this off the top of my head, that we solve JonBenet Ramsey's case, we solve Delphi murders, and we solve Amy Mihaljevic. And if we could solve those three next year, it'd be a pretty good year.
It'd be a hell of a year.
Yeah.
One hell of a year. So I know that you have got to roll, sir, but thank you so much for coming on and discussing this case. I know that this case is close to your heart, and you definitely have a good perspective on it, and do appreciate you coming on, because the audience always asks after Nick is on, why wasn't the captain there?
Because we don't like each other.
Yeah, they.
Well, we like each other, but no. So no, it was great to talk with you, and I hope you have a great holiday.
Yeah. And you as well, and everybody else. And where can people find all your shows?
Just truecrimegarage.com, and we're on Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. But I also look forward to you. I hope we both get to hang out in Vegas this year.
Yeah, baby. CrimeCon.
CrimeCon.
Vegas, baby.
Yeah.
All right. That will do it for Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey? Don't forget to check out my new podcast, Big Mountains and Old Friends. Just started on December 28th. I will be traveling all over North America visiting some of the best ski resorts. So join me for the adventure of a lifetime. And thank you to the captain for making time out of his schedule for this special holiday episode of Who Killed. And thank you to Evergreen Podcasts for bringing me on board as not only a producer, but a place to host my show. So, as you guys know, I drop new episodes of Who Killed every Friday. If you enjoy this podcast and my other shows, you can help support the podcast by using my PayPal username, @WilliamHuffman3. Or you can contribute to the show via the Venmo app with my username, @Bill-Huffman-3. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Every contribution, big or small, helps keep these slow burn media podcasts running. You can also help support the show by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you listen to your favorite shows, because those 5 stars do help to keep the important cases that I cover, such as the Amy Mahalovic case, in the spotlight. So if you'd like to stay up to date on the cases that I have covered, as well as the new shows I have in the pipeline, please follow me on Twitter at BillHuffman3. Thank you so much again for listening. Please have a safe New Year's Eve. Until next time, as always, be healthy and stay safe.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence and give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast that holds weekly gatherings around the campfire. Let me tell you what you're going to get. You're going to hear stories about demonic possessions, prison stabbings, skinwalkers, glitches in the Matrix, cult leaders, missing 411, night marchers, Operation Paperclip, Mesopotamian devil worship, and so many monsters it'll give Kanye West a runaway for his money. Pop and meme culture also aren't off topic. A camp where laughs and scares are constantly competing for first place. We're just a group of friends trying to bust each other's balls, find the best stories, and expand the circle in the process. 3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast, not for the faint or fragile of heart. Let's go.